Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast. This is the space and the place for leadership learning. I'm Joanne Smichael. I'm a speaker, an educator, a consultant, and a forever student of the world. Enjoy this episode. It is an honor and a privilege to have Dr. Portia Rawls back for another conversation. She has a really interesting backstory, front story, middle story. I learned so much about her in our first conversation, and I wanted to have her back to talk about her life and her life as a pioneer in mental health, in the fire service, all of that. The last time we were here, well, welcome. Let me say that. Welcome.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, sure.
Last time we were here, you shared a lot about the business, Rawls and Associates. You shared a little bit about life in the fire service. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. I think that's where I'd like to start today. How did life in the fire service and all your athletic stuff prepare you for becoming an entrepreneur in the field of mental health? And next question, and I know from what was that qualitative research, you're not supposed to ask a bunch of questions at once, but I'm going to. What were some of the roadblocks and how'd you get around them? So it's your story is fascinating. I just want to know more. Oh, you know what? I forgot to mention the last time we talked, Sisters in the Fire. Sisters in the Fire. So this is a book that Portia wrote that is a bestseller on Amazon about Sisters in the Fire, her life in the fire service. So I encourage you, if you have not already read Sisters in the Fire, get it and read it because you will be mesmerized by the stories. Okay. So Sisters in the Fire. Talk some more about that later, but okay. How'd you get prepared to be an entrepreneur and then to just close doors, open doors, and in the fire service and in life, what were some of the roadblocks and how'd you get around them?
Okay, so I think watching my dad was an A1 contractor. He had a construction business. I mean, he also worked for the railroads, but he had a construction business. So watching him, you know, go work on the railroad, then come home in the morning, change his clothes, and then he would go build houses. That's what he did. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I can't say he set me down and said, okay, this is what you do for being an entrepreneur. But the one thing I did learn, you know, the basic thing of business, minimize expenses and costs and maximize your revenue. As far as the lessons from athletics and Stanford and the fire department, I think it made me tough. You know, I always tell people being an entrepreneur is not for the weak. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's tough owning your own business. Everybody has these, mm-hmm. I'm gonna own my business and I'm going to be able to come in whenever I want to. And so the challenges and things I faced in the fire department, Stanford, one of the lessons that I picked up, I'm not going to say maybe everybody picked up, but one of the things I remember when they were doing our freshman orientation, they said, we don't care what you major in, because the majority of you are not going to end up doing what you major in anyway. They say, we want you guys to learn how to learn and to think. We want to teach you how to think. Mm-hmm. We can say critical thinking now, but we want to make sure you're able to do that. And if we accomplish that, you can do whatever you want to do in life. That's what they, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. So I've always had that. So that those two lessons, the toughness of the fire department and some of the challenges, so that when I faced those challenges as an entrepreneur and business in the early days, I didn't give up. And mm-hmm. same with athletics. You know, I don't know if it's a weak. Sometimes I think it may be one of my weaknesses, but I never think about failing when I start something. It doesn't cross in my head. It just doesn't.
Share that. I do not think about failing. I am surprised when I have setbacks. I'm always like, what?
What? Yeah.
What's like, this about?
You know, so I think I need a little bit more of that. Maybe not failing, but preparing for other things. So I really, my push to start the practice wasn't because, oh, I want to start my own business. It really was because I saw this need in the community, this gap. And that was my catalyst. That was my motivation. And then I had to learn all of the business stuff. Okay. And even up to more recently, I had to learn, you know, learn about key performance indicators and all of that stuff. But it was really trying, my push for always, as we expanded and grew in the business was, okay, I see another need in the community, and I think we can handle that gap. We can meet that gap. If I had it to do over again, I probably would hire somebody to run all the business side and just let me go and be the visionary and figure out what's needed in the community and then make that happen. Okay. Yeah.
So thinking about the fire service, how did that relate or prepare you for that chapter as an entrepreneur? And I'm curious because I know that you were one of a very small number of African American women in the fire service. So I'm curious about the roadblocks, the obstacles, and then how you translated that into preparing for your next chapter.
Well, I guess for me, and people say this, and it's kind of cliche, but that doesn't kill you, only make you stronger. So I gained a lot of strength from the challenges and for the obstacles I dealt with. And if I gained a lot of mental strength, I gained a lot of emotional strength, that I'm just not going to give up. You're not, you know, I'm not going to take no for an answer. You're not going to tell me I can't do this. And whatever barriers you put up, I'm going to figure out a way to get around them. Those lessons, because I was the first African-American. I was only the second African-American woman they had hired in the Norfolk Fire Department. And they are the third oldest professional department in the nation.
Wow.
Okay. And so when I first went up to lieutenant, I was the first African-American woman to be promoted to lieutenant or to an officer ranking, period. When I went to captain, it was the same story. When I was acting as battalion chief, which was my last assignment, I would act as battalion chief. I left the department before I got the chance to take the promotional exam for that. That was the first African-American. So everything about me, it was the first. I did not plan on being a pioneer. And I say that in my book. Most people don't wake up and say, I think when I get grown, I'm going to be a pioneer or something. So, you know, trying to keep me from promoting, being promoted, all of the things that those barriers prepared me for the barriers I found in business. Because, I mean, some of the barriers they're similar in character, but not exactly the same barriers. So, for example, trying to get funding for your business, you know, I found out very quickly that, you know, unfortunately, it's the playing field is not as even as I would like it to be for women-owned business and things like that. Trying to get contracts for municipalities and those things. But I continued to persevere and entrepreneur because of the work I was doing in the community. And eventually what I learned is if you do quality enough work, people will come looking for you. And that's what began to happen.
Yeah.
And another saying that I live by is that I learned this from Zig Ziglar. If you help enough people get what they want in life, you'll get what you want in life. So the other principle I live by is really trying to help people. You know, consulted with a lot of business owners, mental health business owners over the years, and just trying to help people, you know. And that also played a role. But I just think the mental toughness I had to gain from the fire department. You know, the one thing about public safety is that you're not the person when you leave. You're not the person you were coming into it. It changes you. Sometimes it can change you for the good, and sometimes it can change you for the negative, or it could be a little bit of both. So I definitely know, as much as I like to say that I don't have a firefighter personality, I do.
Well, wait a minute. What's a firefighter personality?
So, we talk a firefighter personality. Number one, we tend not to take no for an answer. Okay, we feel like we can accomplish anything, can deal with any situation, and nothing can harm us. Okay, we do not like we like to we're very straightforward and cut and dry. They tend, as a, when you get a bunch of firefighters, they're not going to sugarcoat anything. They're going to tell you exactly what they have on their mind, and they don't care whether you like it or not or how it affects you. Okay. And another big part of that culture is that, and that's considered, they honor that, you being straightforward and straight to the point. Another part of that is timeliness and being organized. I always tell people, you can burn the house down and do a lot of things in the fire department, but don't be late for anything. Okay. So that need to be on time and just to do everything in a very timely, organized fashion. Another thing, it teaches you to be very organized, because if you ever went into a fire station and they let you look at their rig or the truck or the fire engine, everything has its particular part, its space, so that we don't have to think about where to find things when we're on scene. And so that's another part of our personality. That you'll find with fire department. And other thing is, and this is good and bad, is that you're trained that mistakes are not optional.
What does that mean?
Meaning that when you go through the academy, it is ingrained in you that if you make a mistake, it can get you killed, or at
Get
worst,
somebody killed.
get somebody killed or get you seriously injured. So you're trained that mistakes are not an option. You cannot make mistakes. Now that can be a good thing and a bad thing. I've had to kind of ease that mindset over the years, because mistakes are a natural part of life. But in public safety, it's not an option for you to make a mistake.
I
Okay.
can understand that. I can
Yeah.
definitely understand that.
So how that played out with me as an entrepreneur is making sure whatever I was doing, not just in clinical services, but even in the business side, trying to make sure that I had everything right and that I wasn't making mistakes, because sometimes you only get one shot at some things. So that's the other part of a firefighter's personality. And so that's pretty much the things that you'll see, get around them.
Okay, so there's a space between Stanford, fire, and a doctorate. Where does a doctorate come in?
Probably gonna listen to this and go like, wow, okay. So I am a person of faith, and I was working, not working, but I was volunteering. I was in over the youth ministry of this particular church and working with the kids out in the communities. And so I think we did a summer camp. I had over 100 kids in the summer camp. But what I kept finding out and kept seeing is that these kids were dealing with a lot of mental health issues. And I didn't have the training, none of the staff that was working with, we didn't know what to do with that as a church. And so I decided, okay, I'm gonna go back to school to get my master's in counseling so that I can better serve these kids and work with these kids. I can better understand their mental health challenges and hopefully develop something, that can help them through this ministry and so forth. While I was working on my master's in counseling, the particular university decided to start a doctoral program in clinical psychology, a PsyD program. And at the time, the dean, yes, I think she was, yeah, she was the dean of the school, came to me and said, "Are you going to apply for the doctoral program?" And I was like, "Look, I get my master's, I'm good." No. I had never planned on ever going back to school again, but she was, I said, and I need to pray about that. So she shoves the application into my chest and says, "Well, while you praying, I need you to fill out this application, get it back to me." I looked at her like, So then I went to talk to one of the other professors in the counseling program. I was like, "I am too old to be trying to go and get a doctorate and all of this." And so Jackie has passed away. And Jackie, I think at that time, was about 70 something. She had gone back to school to get her doctorate when she was like in her 60s or so. And she said, Well, regardless of whether you pursue a doctorate or not, you're going to get old. So you just well take, so you just well be doing something worthwhile while you're getting older. You know, okay, nobody is helping me out here. You know, so I applied. I got conditionally accepted. I had to take, because I didn't have enough psychology courses on my undergrad transcript, I had to take two psychology courses, I think at the master's level, make a B or better, and they let me in the program. And now I had no idea, and you know, I laugh about this every time I tell this. So I had no idea what I was getting myself into until the first day I walked in class, and I was sitting in class, and they started lecturing. And I'm listening, and I'm like, "Ooh, okay, girl, you got some work to do, cause you know nothing about what they're talking about." And so, for about my first year and a half, 2 years, I determined that I wasn't just going to gloss over stuff. So I literally would have the Webster Dictionary, the APA, the American Psychological Association Dictionary. Whenever I was reading stuff, because it was so much terminology that I had no idea, had never been introduced to. So it took me forever to read, because I read everything. Like some of my classmates who had masters in psychology or masters in counseling, they were, "Oh, we've heard this before." But I look at that as being a blessing in disguise, that I read everything that was assigned to me, every book, every article, because I felt like it gave me, I gained more from the program instead of just saying, "Oh, I've already had this and I don't need this." So that went on for about a year and a half, almost 2 years. And then I began to see concepts. I began to hear concepts that being repeated. So I had a very steep learning curve for about a year and a half or two. And then it kind of began to level out. You know, I was able to connect things. And so, yeah, but I feel like it was a blessing. I think it was a blessing that I didn't know about it, because I probably wouldn't have pursued a doctorate had I known how much work it was going to
Yeah, nobody tells you on the front end how much work it's
be.
going to
Yeah.
be.
You know, now, you know, I'm a professor now, and I tell my students, I said, this is a doctorate in a nutshell. We give you more work than is humanly possible for you to do, and we expect you to do it. And so, but yeah, so I ended up actually getting selected as the number one graduate of my class. So, you know, and ended up being invited back to be a postdoc at that university and become a part of their faculty. I taught for about 7 years there in the doctoral program. Then I left and went full-time clinical. But yeah, I think it's been, I don't regret it. It's probably one of the best decisions I made in my life, or was forced to make, I should probably say. Because it's just opened so many doors, and just so much, it's just opened so many doors. It totally changed my life getting that degree.
Now, have you ever or do you ever sit back when you're on the zero turn thing? What's
Oh,
it
my zero turn lawnmower.
called? Yeah, when you're on your zero turn lawnmower, do you ever sit back and say, "Whew, look how far I have come, and look at this wonderful patchwork I've created"?
I wish I could tell you yes, but no, because I'm always thinking about the next thing. And what I've, the lesson I'm learning in this phase of my life is to sit back and look at all that I've done, and to be grateful for the opportunities and things that I've accomplished. And you know, for me, I don't, you know, when you were reading the opening, like I said, I still don't think I've done the ultimate yet. And people look at me and go, I still think there's something that I'm supposed to be doing, I guess my final chapter, that's supposed to be far more impactful and greater and legacy leaving than what I've done. And I can't tell you what that is, but that's what I feel. That's what I sense. I don't, I, in some kind of way, I think it may be connected to the Sisters in the Fire. You know, I wrote the book because I wanted that history to be captured of the women who helped integrate the nation's fire service. And now we're working on the documentary. And I don't know where that's going to take me, but I think some kind of way is connected to that. I've gone back to painting since I've, was able to close the practice. I'm doing painting. I'm going back to doing my artwork and stuff. And so, but I don't think I've done the ultimate thing yet. And I know that may be hard for people to hear, but I don't.
And maybe for you, because of your nature, there's just a series of ultimates. Do you know what I mean?
I never thought about that.
I mean, because the fire thing, that was a pretty ultimate. The practice, building such a large practice, that was a pretty ultimate. So maybe your life is a series of ultimates.
Ultimates, yeah. But I do, because I do, where I live at, I live on, I end up building a home on my grandfather's farm. And so that has caused me to reflect. One of my aunts said, your grandfather would be so proud of you because he was just a farmer. And I do sometimes when I'm riding on my zero turn and I'm looking across the land and going like, wow, by normal, by society standard, he would be considered, he would have been considered an uneducated man, but he had a lot of wisdom. And so I think about him and I think about the years I spent as a child running around with no shoes on behind him as he's out farming. And that's what I reflect on the most. And I was like, wow, you've come full circle because you've come back to this place,
To this land, yeah, to this land, and built something that your grandparents probably could not have imagined.
So I do reflect on that quite a bit.
So, as you think about the experiences and the notable experiences, it seems to me, and well, I know this because I know you, you're not bitter. And you've had some very difficult experiences from Stanford through the fire service, through the closing of the practice. What is it that keeps you from being bitter? Because you have had some knocks.
I know part of it's my faith, but I just feel like that's just such wasted energy. Because when you're bitter and you're unforgiving and all of the stuff that goes with that, it really only hurts you. And I don't want to spend my, and I don't want to spend my energy because I still feel like I got a lot of life to live. I don't spend my energy and my mental space filled up with all of that. Okay. I acknowledge the reality. People say, oh, you're kind of like in denial. No, I'm not in denial. I acknowledge the review, want to talk about that and just have a session about that. I can talk to you about the very difficult things I endured in the fire service and even as an entrepreneur and stuff, but I don't know. I just don't f want to spend my time like that. I'm gonna be honest with you. I do feel like I still have more life to live. And I always believe that, when something ends, there's something else coming my way. I may not always know what that something else is. And that's where I feel like I'm at right now, that I don't fully know what that something else is, but I did feel led. I've always wanted to go back to painting, and I got so busy with psychology, I had to put that aside and really felt the push to start back painting. And to be honest, I didn't know if I could do it anymore because it had been so many years. And I was really amazed. Like, I guess once you're trained to do something, it kind of starts
Comes
coming.
back.
And so I really felt that. I really feel the push to get this documentary completed, about the book. And I don't know what
Can you
the.
talk a little bit about the book and the documentary? Do you mind?
No. So Sisters in the Fire, what I did is I went and collected the stories for those who were willing to let me interview them of African American women who were part of the first and second wave to integrate the nation's fire service. So most of these women, pretty much all of them, they were the first to be hired in the department. They were the first. I was so blessed and fortunate to actually be able to interview Chief Cloud. She was the first African American woman fire chief in the nation. She was the chief of East Point, fire department in Georgia. So I went and collected their stories. Some of them I had met over the years of my career. Some of them I did not know and got connected to them by talking to others. And so I wanted their stories to be recorded and told. And so the documentary entails us actually going and interviewing these women, the producers, and filming it and doing and telling their stories and doing the, the background filming of where they were in their own departments and things of that nature. I just feel like this is a story that hasn't been told, because when I began to investigate, I was like, well, let me see, has anybody written about this? And I started looking and I couldn't find anybody that had written about us. Okay. And so I just, and so that was the initial push for the book. And then I just, I'm kind of move, I move intuitively. I mean, some people would say it's by faith. Some people who are not, spiritually bound would say into, but I move and I felt a push to take this document and make it happen. And to be, and it's about their triumphs. It's about, the challenges, how they overcame. And the title of the book, Sisters in the Fire, I feel like it can apply to a lot of things, not just for those of us in the fire service. I think it has a broad meaning to many. And so that's what we are. We've done, I think, three or four of the interviews. I got one more I'm getting ready to schedule. We are in conversations with investors and to try to, because, the one thing about indie films is that you have to raise the money, I'm fortunate enough to have gotten connected with a producer, media company, that's well versed in the industry, and so we're doing the work. That's where we are, and I just we'll keep pushing forward. Matter of fact, next week I'm meeting with somebody to discuss how they can help us to get this thing over the finish line.
I love it. I love it. Do you know this old song? I don't know who sang it, but it's an old gospel song. Have you been tried in the fire?
No, I need to go look that one up.
Yeah, have you been tried in the fire? Have you been
And
tried
I
in the
feel like
fire?
I've been tried in the fire. Yeah, I
And
really do.
the chorus is, and did you come out like pure gold? I don't know who sang that, but it's a beautiful song.
Let's go look. Yeah. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. When I first left the fire department, even my mentors, I didn't speak to anybody from the fire service about 2 years. I told them all, I don't want to talk to none of y'all. That's exactly how I said it. I was like, even my mentor, who, has been my cheerleader from day one, I said, I don't want to talk to none of you guys. I did not talk to anybody because I was like, I need to heal. I need to get over some stuff. Okay. And they respected it, and I stayed away for about 2 years. And then I came back to, do to help them with some of the mental health challenges that they continue to deal with and some other things. But for 2 years, I didn't talk. Even my brother from another mother. Okay. I just spoke to, I didn't even talk to him for 2 years. I none of y'all. So had to take some time to heal. I don't want people to think, oh, I just, skipped through this stuff and I was just wonderful and okay. No, it took a moment to heal.
So if you had a fire service do-over, I know we don't get do-overs, what would yours be?
Fire service duo. I don't think I would change anything. I love the fire service. I love being a firefighter. I didn't like all the other stuff, because you were the first woman and you were this and all, but I love being a firefighter. And people look at me like, I love running into burning buildings. There's only a handful of people in the world that can do that. Okay. Or have done that. And, for me, it was like, wow, you went into there and you came out and you survived, and you did what you were supposed to do, as far as, helping people. I didn't like the EMS side. When I went in, we were purely fire service, fire department. Then, because it's just a trend that happened across the nation, they merged the EMS. I didn't like that side, I'm gonna be honest with you. But the firefighting side and all that entails, I love that. I love the challenge. People say it's a rush. Maybe it is, but I just love the challenge. I always like being challenged and being able to achieve something that maybe people say you can't. Yeah,
So,
so I don't have a do-over. I
my
went,
brother.
yes, it was hard. Yes, it was difficult. Yes, I shed tears, then shed them in front of them because you ain't gonna make me cry. Okay. But I wouldn't change anything because I believe the person I am today is because of who I was then. You know,
Then.
I was years ago. It was like in the 1990s, and that was still when Northern Ireland and UK were fighting and warring against each other. And I had gone over to the UK right after they had kind of, I guess, negotiated a peace. And I happened to see the interview of the gentleman who was in charge of the army for no the Northern Ireland, and they were interviewing him. And they asked him, did you regret some of the things you did when you were at war with, you know, Britain and the UK and all of that? And he said, no. And the reporter kind of looked at me, all the people you killed and all. And he said, I wouldn't be the person I am today if I had not been the person I was then. And that has stuck. I don't remember anything else that man has said, but it changed my perspective. That saying has stuck with me all of these years. And maybe that's why I don't regret and I don't get bitter, because I understand every step of your journey builds and leads to who you are today.
I like that. So, throughout this journey, what did you do, or what do you do to decompress and to tend to your soul? I know that you're a woman of faith. I know you pray. I know you're active in your congregation. What else do you do to take care of yourself?
I like to travel. I know this may stand. I love cutting grass because it's one of those things that you can just think about whatever. I play with my dog. I hang out with my spouse and my family. I had taken up scuba diving. I lost my partners that I used to scuba dive with. So I'm still actively looking for somebody to get certified so I can go scuba diving. I love to swim. Yeah, anything fun, anything athletic, all of that stuff. That's what I do to decompress. You know, looking at movies, I love looking at movies, finding new movies, you know. I love going to museums. I don't get to do that as often as I like to, but
Well,
yeah.
yeah, because you don't have any down there.
But I love, and I, you know, and believe it or not, since I've been painting, I forgot how therapeutic painting is, you know, but it has definitely been a it has really helped a lot. And I was, you know, and I teach this stuff because I teach about trauma and, you know, right brain, left brain, and about, you know, getting to autistic things to heal the brain. And I really didn't realize it till I was painting when I was like, wow, there's a level of peace and calmness that has come even more so, I've noticed.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. I'm glad you found rediscovered that love. I'm glad you rediscovered that. So I want to talk again. I want to talk again about some other things, because I know that you help people in making these transitions, these difficult transitions. And that is what I would like to talk about if you're open to coming back.
Sure. No
Yeah,
problem.
because I want to talk about, you've been very resilient, and I know that word is
Oh, yeah, I know. It's
overused.
almost becoming
Wait.
pop culture now.
Oh. I know that.
Psychology, we like to call it.
Yes. I know that you have led a full textured and continue to lead a full textured patchwork life. And I want to talk about how other people can do that. So if you're open to returning, I would love to have you.
Sure.
Thank you. And
All
thank you
right.
for your time today. Wait a minute, Portia. We talked about Sisters in the Fire, but that is not the only book you've written. What is the other book?
Uncovering and healing your woundedness. And
Okay.
yeah, it's a book kind of dealing with trauma and things that particularly it can be male or, but it's more written for women, things that they go through and how do you go about the steps. The book is very kind of user friendly. You can actually take the book and go through the steps and of things that you can do.
Okay.
Okay.
Uncovering and
And
healing
healing your
your
wound.
woundedness. Yep. Yep. Both that and Sisters in the Fire are available on Amazon. Hey, Portia, do you also do speaking engagements?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought so. I thought so.
Yes, I do. Actually enjoy those.
Okay.
Lot, yes. So I'm
Okay.
looking for anybody want to bring me in to talk. It doesn't have to be to women, it can be to any groups. I've done both.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Well, we're going to talk again soon. Thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. Be sure that you subscribe and share. You can get more leadership learning from my YouTube channel and by following me on Instagram. Reach out when you're looking for a speaker to energize your next event. Reach out when you need curated leadership learning for your organization. Reach out when you're ready for consulting that will help your organization fulfill its potential. I'm Joanne Smichel, and thank you for tuning in.